Global stocks reach a five-year high.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has hit yet another all-time high, and the world is following suit. Global shares are now at their highest level since June of 2008. For more, we're joined from London by the BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, so certainly American investors have some things to be happy about, improving job numbers and improving housing market. What is the rest of the world so excited about?
Well, there's an element of being excited about what's happening in the United States. Signs of life in what is, after all, the world's largest economy are good news for everybody else. But there are some other factors. There's the gradual return of confidence to financial markets in the Eurozone. It's another question how durable that will prove to be, but certainly the mood has improved a lot. In Britain, there's also the measures being taken by the central bank, the Bank of England, rather like the Fed in the US. It's been pumping a lot of money into the economy, and a great deal of that money has subsequently found its way into the stock market, and that has helped to support share prices here in London as well.
And as we wait for the jobs number this morning, we know that in the U.S. we're looking at an unemployment rate of 7.9%. How does that compare when it comes to where you sit?
Well, it's not that different from where I sit here in the U.K., where the figure is 7.7%, just a touch lower. But in the Eurozone, on the European mainland, things are looking, for the most part, a lot worse. The average figure across the whole Eurozone is 11.9. Now, that does hide some very wide variations between the likes of Austria, where it is just below 5%. And at the other extreme, there's the dismal picture in Spain and Greece, where the number of people without jobs is more than one in four, over 25%.
The BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker, in London for us. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Jeremy, as always.
Well, the Transportation Security Administration announced this week that it will allow small pocket knives and certain sports equipment back on planes for the first time since the 9/11 attacks. And flight attendants are not happy about it. Marketplace's Chrissy Clark reports.
When I called the Association of Flight Attendants, the receptionist asked me, "This is about the whole snakes on a plane thing, right?"
"I have had it with these monkey-fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane!"
That's the G-rated version of the movie. Of course, snakes still aren't really allowed in plane cabins. And flight attendants are okay with the wiffle ball bats, says Association President Vita Shook. But allowing knives, even ones less than 6 centimeters long?
Bad idea. It could do some serious damage on the airplane. And it's not like there's this outcry to bring knives on board.
The TSA declined an interview, but issued a statement saying the new rules allow them to, quote, better focus their efforts on finding higher threat items, such as explosives.
You can't protect against everything.
Doug Laird is an airport security consultant.
I would much rather see the TSA trying to find the components of IEDs than worrying about looking for a Swiss Army knife.
Still, flight attendants are taking their case to Capitol Hill, and federal air marshal groups have echoed their concerns. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are higher in global trading this morning, up 2.5% in Tokyo, 0.4% higher in Frankfurt. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow added 33 points to close at yet another all-time high, 14,329.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
New York is holding public art events across the city this week, and tomorrow the focus will be on Chelsea, a neighborhood that has long been a magnet for art galleries. But that era may be coming to an end, as Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
It's a chilly afternoon in New York, but there's a healthy crowd at the High Line in Chelsea. That's a park built on an old elevated rail line. Visitor Helen Crestwell is enjoying her stroll.
It's just such a nice walk. I love all the artwork, what they've done with their gardens.
The High Line is dotted with sculptures and murals, which echo Chelsea's vibrant art gallery scene at street level. Those galleries helped transform Chelsea into a desirable neighborhood. And it wasn't always that way, says Stuart Siegel of commercial real estate firm CBRE.
In the mid-90s, galleries started to flee Soho as rents approached $50 a square foot. Chelsea was basically a seedy warehouse area.
Seedy, but affordable. Since then, though, Siegel says rents have gone up tenfold, and many galleries are now being pushed out. Galleries like Schroeder Romero, which just closed its doors. Owner Sarah Jo Romero remembers the feeling of unity among gallery owners when she opened the gallery with Lisa Schroeder in 2006.
We all thought it would be wonderful to all kind of band together and be on one block together.
It was. And when the High Line opened in 2009, Lisa Schroeder says the galleries thought it would be a boon.
We were really excited. That whole neighborhood started to change because of the High Line, and we thought that we were going to be part of that sort of revitalization. And it turned out that that didn't happen. For a lot of us middle-tier galleries, we just became priced out.
Their rent doubled. And it didn't help that galleries found themselves competing for space with New York's booming tech scene. Stuart Siegel says that really took off after Google bought a building in Chelsea 2 years ago.
The Google effect has had an enormous impact on the market in Chelsea. There are thousands of companies that want to be near Google.
As for the art scene, some galleries are migrating again, this time to Manhattan's Lower East Side. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
And finally to Camden Point, Missouri, which is home to fewer than 500 people and is about to get a new sewer system thanks to Mark and Cindy Hill, who recently won $136 million in the lottery. The couple is also paying for a new fire station for the town. As for spending some money on themselves, so far just a new pickup truck. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.